Welcome to a podcast of the Mike Novak Show. Don't forget that you can listen to Mike live on Sundays from 8 to 10 a.m. on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Scientists recently discovered a parasitic fish off the coast of Jersey that, quote, survives by eating its host tongue and then attaching itself inside the mouth in place of that tongue to scavenge food the fish eats. Warning. What I'm about to show you may make your lunch come up, which is bad news because your tongue may eat it. Jimmy, let's haunt their dreams forever.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on South Pulaski Road, just across the street from the 53A bus stop and in between Paco's Tacos and Zaka Tacos, it's the Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
Welcome back to the Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees. Podcasts of this program, along with green tips, valuable links, and DeMaio weather, are a click away at MikeNovak.net. That's MikeNovak.net. Now here's the man who sees green everywhere he looks, mainly because he's colorblind, Mike Novak.
What do you mean by that? Did you see how this all comes together? Mike Sanders is talking earlier today. Of course, it was a repeat. But fascinating nonetheless about the North Pacific Gyre. Are you familiar with that, Shauna Coronado?
I am. It's quite a disaster, actually.
It is. It's a worldwide disaster in slow motion, mm-hmm. which is still unfolding. It's been unfolding for a long time. And then, of course, and for those of you who didn't hear Mike's show, it's basically floating garbage. We have floating garbage all over the planet. And I'm actually hoping in January to have somebody who was on that trip that Mike was talking about this morning to go out and look at this garbage floating in the Pacific Ocean. And I've known about this probably 6 years, 7 years. I mean, this thing's been there for centuries, actually. In the old days, it was just garbage, and it would break down. But since we invented plastics, now the plastics float around.
It's most specifically plastics, and in fact, if you've done the research on it, a lot of bottle caps, which I find very interesting, billions of bottle caps just floating around out there.
Yeah, and we're not talking about metal bottle caps. We're talking plastic bottle caps. I imagine the metal ones would float to sink to the bottom. So I found out about this about 6 years ago when I was interviewing a guy back when I was at Gargantua Radio down the dial, who had done a around-the-world yacht race. And he was in the South Pacific and came across this stream of garbage. And he said you would look one way to the horizon and there was garbage, and you would look back the other way to the horizon, there was garbage, and you could follow this thing for days, just days and days and days, and never see the end of it.
Yeah.
It was terrifying. So that's one way we bring this together, and I'm thinking of, you know, the Stephen Colbert bit that opened the show with the parasite hooking onto your tongue, and because last week or a couple of weeks ago, in the last couple of weeks, we've talked about the Asian jumping carp, and some people, you know, I caught a little bit of a wake with Jake yesterday, and you know, he's making fun of the $3 million that was spent to poison fish in the sanitary canal. Rightly so, that it should come to that. But it's not that we're spending that money to poison the fish. It's that we got to this point in the first place.
Yeah, we're spending the money to save the lake. There's a difference.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I'm not happy about poisoning, you know, tons and tons of fish in the canal. What did they fill up, two barges or something? I don't know what it was.
A really large number.
And the fact that they found one, see, and the worst possible thing that could have happened is exactly what happened, which is that one carp was found. So, you know, it's the $3 million carp.
Yeah.
But that's really not the case at all. In fact, I read an article yesterday in the Trib. That says that this is an opportunity for scientists to see really kind of what's in there and look for other invasive species, like the gobies, which are kind of taking over Lake Michigan. You know, it led me to all these, you get on the internet and you read all these other things and you find out all this other connected stuff.
Yeah, 6 degrees of separation.
Right, and I started reading about what it means to have the Great Lakes change. Folks, they're changed, you know, they're already not what we used to see. Scientists are diving at the bottom of the lake and finding algae that was never there before. Obviously, there's at least two kinds of mussels. There's a zebra mussel, and I can't even remember what the other one's called, which are completely changing the ecosystem of the Great Lakes. Trout used to be the big game fish. The lamprey eels pretty much wiped them out when they got in 100 years ago. And on and on and on. The fish that they're pulling up now, people in the industry say are half the size they were 10 years ago, mainly maybe because they don't have enough food to eat.
Or fact that they're dumping all sorts of sludge out Gary, Indiana way into the Great Lakes.
Absolutely. You know, my concern is that they had to poison all these fish. Well, they're not just poisoning fish. When you put poison in the ecosystem, it poisons far more than that. So how are they touching the rest of the environmental community?
Well, yeah, you know, but that was sort of what it was, the lesser of the two evils. At that point, it's like, do we nuke the river, the canal, actually, at this point, and help protect the Great Lakes? And there are people who say, well, you know, you can't protect them at this point, too late. And I don't know. I don't know the answer. I don't know.
It's never too late for a happy ending. You can't be without hope.
Oh, gee.
Can't be without hope. It's the holiday season. You got to be optimistic.
It's the holiday season.
Need your frozen robins.
Yeah, we do. We sing that song. That is my producer, the optimistic one, Heather Fry. I'm Mike Novak. I am the dark one.
It's like you, the power of the dark side.
You experience the dark side of gardening.
Well, you always say that you don't get enough light in your garden at home, so maybe that's what turned you.
That what?
The sunshine. You don't get all the direct sunshine.
That's right.
In your garden.
Well, now, it's funny you should say that, because the woman sitting opposite us, Shauna Coronado, has... do you prefer Shauna Lee or...
Shauna is fine.
Shauna's
yes,
fine?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. If you go to my website, MikeNovak.net, this week, you'll see her lovely picture up there and her list of accomplishments, including writing a book called Gardening Nude.
Nice.
Sounds so naughty, doesn't it?
It's so naughty.
So naughty, it's nice.
So, in honor of that, we're all nude here in the studio today.
All right.
It's chilly.
That's the only way to be.
I want a mental picture from everybody.
I don't.
No.
It burns.
I'm going to get email, let me tell you. Wow.
And you're going to get a lot, because Shauna, okay, in addition to having written Gardening Nude, she's got a website with the same name. She's got thecasualgardener.com. She's got blog sites. She's got a newspaper column. She's all over YouTube. And this is the part that is the scary part, the really scary part. She has 10,000 followers on Twitter.
Nice.
Almost 11,000. Woo-woo.
I don't even know how that's possible. In fact, I don't think it is possible. I think it's a scam. But,
it's not a scam.
I want 1,000 by the end of the day. You have the power.
Oh.
You've got the 10,000 people there. I want 1,000 followers by the end of the day.
Come on, friends. You got to get out there and friend the man. He's lonely.
He's very lonely.
Yes. Now, the reason the gardening nude term is obviously it's metaphorical, but the real concept was I wanted people to strip away the excuses and get out there and get
you
outside
said
of nature.
Strip.
I did. And nude. Oh my God!
Can we get this all out? I'm
kind
like
of excited.
Emotionally, I'm 13. Okay, so we have to get all this
definitely
out first. All right.
You have a lot in common with some of my fans. But no, really, it was more about getting green. And can I tell you the story? The story is that I started out with very poor health. I was very ill. And over a period of about 5 years, I discovered nature. Got out and started gardening. I started greening and feeling far, far better than I did originally. In fact, getting rid of the chemicals, all the wonderful things you talk about regularly, I've been doing. The difference, the real miracle cure and the kicker for me was going out behind my fence and on public easement property, building a small, tiny little garden. And every time I walked out that back fence, I got hugs from my neighbors. Pretty soon they were giving me gifts and leaving me love letters, and it was quite exciting.
Wow.
And I realized that the missing component that we all need is community. So being a part of a bigger community, helping community, and building it in general is where my target is. It's all about bringing people together to help each other. And right now in this economy, that's smart thinking.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, that's something that that I've talked about on the show and I'm going to be doing myself. I'm actually looking towards putting a community garden in my own, on my block, on my gang-ridden block.
Are you going to save your tree?
Save my tree. I'm trying to get it cut down.
Oh,
there's a mulberry at this. There's this lot on the corner, and it's not even a fruit bearing mulberry. It's a male's, but it's coming apart. I mean, it's disintegrating, and it's going to hurt somebody. And I have filled out. I got Sean Kingzett from the Care Trees coming to look at it, and he did a report. I sent it to the city, so I'm like, it's out of my hands.
Well,
except I got to keep pushing. And then I want to put a garden in that spot.
I have to tell you that starting a community garden, there are two different types of community gardens. There's a community garden that everyone comes together and gardens as a group.
Mm-hmm.
And the community garden that I built behind this fence, which started out quite small and then expanded to over 200 feet, is really my garden that I've built for the community. And the interesting thing about it is that when you build something beautiful for the community, they're very appreciative. And they love it. I have people that stop along the walkway there. It's a very public thoroughway. Yes, they are hugging me, but they're also telling me all...
They're twittering you.
They're twittering me, yes. They're telling me all the wonderful things about their lives, their families, their illnesses. They're coming out and touching other people in the community is what this garden has become. When I started building the garden and saw the big response, that's when I started writing the book.
Mm-hmm.
Because I knew that this was something very, very powerful, and I wanted to spread and inspire the message.
That's Shauna Lee Coronado, and she's written a book called Gardening Nude, but more importantly, she's got a website with lots of tips, stuff about gardening, thecasualgardener.com. What kinds of stuff do you... Oh, and by the way, getting back to the when you talked about light and everything, that's one of your... I read your book, and I forgot to bring it, of course. I don't have it here.
Right.
But that's... There you go.
It's the naked picture on the front.
Which is... It's a scam. She's not really naked.
Hey, it's creative marketing.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, you know, that was going to be my first question. Is like, other than marketing, why did you call this gardening nude?
That's a great idea. Now, one of the things...
But sunshine is a key.
Yes,
as
it
you
is.
Say in your book, to your health.
Serotonin. You know, all our brains need a little kick of energy. What happens in the wintertime is many people suffer from SAD, sad disorder. Well, it's very
seasonal affect disorder.
Thank you. It's very common now, particularly in the off weather season. And being outside and sunshine helps eliminate that. Being outdoors in nature helps eliminate that. And America right now takes more antidepressants than any other nation. Depression costs employers about $44 billion a year. And that's pretty scary to me. And that's when I was writing the book, that's one of the things I researched, is how can I improve and inspire people to improve depression? And serotonin and exposure to nature, number one way to do that. So that was really one of my goals. The other thing is there was a great study, I'm sure you've heard of it, from the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign by Francis Kuo, which talks about how landscaping and human health are connected. And it's a study that was done in the Chicago Public Housing Development, you know, the old Cabrini Green area.
Yeah.
And among other things, it proved really that landscaping, tree exposure helps improve people's moods, reduces domestic violence and crime. So when I think of those two things, most people don't connect it with gardening, with being outside in nature, but it's very significant.
That's why I'm doing the thing on my block. It's you know, we got gang problems, and I want to change the community. I want to make it harder for them to sell drugs, and you give folks something that's that they can be part of. And I think it is going to help change a community if I can make it work. And it's a long, involved process that I'm going to get into over the coming weeks and months about how you do this. And I'm working with a lot of interesting people, different organizations like Neighbor Space and, Green Core. I want to get involved, and I'm talking to a bunch of different people, but that's in the future. But back to your book, you also know a lot of interesting people that some of whom I know, like Jim Kleinwachter.
Oh, wonderful guy from the Conservation Foundation. Hello, yeah. Jim. I'm sure you're listening right now.
Did he tweet you last night or Facebook you to let you know?
No, actually, no. But here's the thing. He and I have been working. He's been my mentor for many years, and I'm madly in love with the Conservation Foundation. They're doing such wonderful work. But the number one thing that Jim talks about is water conservation. And that garden that I told you about, community garden, 100% drought tolerant. It's a mix of native plants and drought tolerant plants. Water safety is something we were talking about with Lake Michigan, is such a huge concern. And Warrenville, the city that I live in, does not take water from the lake. We take water from the water aquifer.
Mm-hmm.
And so making sure that we're conserving water, we are not putting chemicals in our water, all comes back to gardeners, back to the land. And so educating people on that.
Yeah, right. And when you talk about chemicals, it's not just pesticides and herbicides. It's mm-hmm. fertilizers as well, mm-hmm. Synthetic fertilizers, which we overuse like crazy, mostly on our lawns. And I know you're an advocate of that. You know, my slogan about lawns is, when in doubt, rip it out. And
yes, yeah. I love you. Yeah. I have been waiting to hear this for so long. You know, I ripped out my front lawn. This was an experiment for me. I had a fella that I know who is a buffalo farmer send me 5,000 pounds of rotted buffalo manure. No joke. And I said,
wait, via what?
Wow. I was going to say, who shipped that?
Yeah. Can you imagine? It was in bags. I was emptying bags.
What can Brown do for you?
Exactly. And so it was an experiment this year. I decided, I wanted to help educate people. We went back to speaking about economy. This is about our economy. How can I teach people how to feed themselves? That's really important. We can all do that. I ripped out the front lawn, put the rotted manure on the front lawn, which is fantastic because it's all natural, and then planted the best rock and vegetable garden you have ever seen right out in my front lawn in a beautiful little suburban community. And the result is that my neighbors went wild. Everyone loved it, and I was able to
They went woo
woo. And I pulled out about 100 pounds of vegetables and donated to the local food pantry. And by the way, donate to your local food pantry. There are several here in the Chicagoland region that take fresh food and fresh vegetables. And so it's not all cans. It's really important. So anyway,
digressing on that for a second, because I've had, talked about the Giving Garden for the Daily Herald for years. That's part of the problem with food pantries. It's the stuff that these people get in, everybody's encouraged to put in their dry foods or canned foods, and most of that stuff is loaded with sodium
mm-hmm.
and preservatives, and that's why it can withstand a nuclear attack. And the thing that folks don't get is the fresh vegetables, and that's why I've talked about food issues on this program, there's the term food deserts, and what they mean by that is usually fresh food, fresh vegetables are not within convenient reach of people, and many places in Chicago and other urban areas are food deserts.
Fresh and local, that's what we need. Another thing, have you ever heard of ampleharvest.org?
Ample Harvest? Nope.
Okay.
That's one that's not on the radar.
Ampleharvest.org is a website you can go to find local food banks that are accepting fresh vegetables. And so they're always looking for more food banks to enter that information into their database. But ultimately, I've used it as a resource to try and find my local food pantries. Unfortunately, there's only one in my area that allow fresh food, but I'm hoping that will be expanding over the next several years. Chicagoland is in need.
Oh yeah, absolutely, and it's a huge issue. Local food in Illinois. I mean, I've talked to people from the you're probably aware of the Illinois Local and Organic Food Task Force.
Absolutely.
Which I didn't get, and I just didn't get the name right. It's there's too many words in it, all right? But it's basically Feed Illinois. That's what we need to do, is Feed Illinois from Illinois.
Well,
Illinois feeds Illinois.
We can do it ourselves, too, because here's the thing. That front yard last year looked like a traditional vegetable garden. Next year, I'm making it all ornamental, because I want to show people you don't have to have a perennial bed to have it be attractive. And that's one of the big things. Let's show people it can be an attractive yard. You can live in one of the nicest neighborhoods, grow vegetables all over the place mixed in with your perennials, and be quite successful at it.
That is Shauna Coronado, author of, I have to say it?
Yes.
Gardening Nude.
So exciting.
I've gotten over the titillation.
You say that, but I don't buy it.
I'm so
I'm not
past
buying.
That now. I don't know.
That's a teenager.
We will continue the discussion in a second. I know you have some other things you want to bring up. Things for the holidays. I saw on your website about the being green for the holidays and having a green tree, and we've talked about that. You know, the very basically, get a real tree. If you want to be green, folks who are, and if you're worried about the carbon and that sort of thing, you mulch it, and the carbon goes right back into the soil and into your yard. I mean, that's the answer to that. But, make your list, check it twice, and when we get back here, let's talk about some of that stuff.
Awesome.
Meanwhile, if you're looking for the perfect holiday gift for the gardener in your life, you can't do any better. Then a subscription to Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. This is the garden magazine for our region, which means this part of the Midwest. Now, one of the things you're going to hear is that it's interesting. The magazine is going through some changes, and I'm not breaking this story because it was out in Beth Bott's blog yesterday. Beth Bott wrote about this. What's that?
I love Beth. She's awesome.
Beth's great. About how the magazine is about to be sold, but doesn't mean it's not going to be here. I mean, actually, that's good news because the magazine will continue, and that's why you should subscribe to it. In addition to consistently excellent articles on everything, I tell you what, go to Beth's blog, which is Gardening in Chicago, I believe, and I because I know she's got something up about. By the way, about you, no, about Eric Hansen, who's on the second hour.
Oh, wonderful!
Eric Hansen is doing stuff on propane. He's putting propane into his power tools, which is a cool thing. Just type Beth Bott's. Okay, and I can't believe it. I never can remember the name of her blog, and it's there.
You'll never forget gardeningnude.com.
No, I guess not. You know, that's one of the things. It's like there's so many, because I have wait. I've got now. You look it up. It's there. Growing in Chicago. That's it. Good Lord. All right, let's go to...
We love you, Beth.
We do, even if we can't remember the name of your blog, Growing in Chicago. There it is. She writes, scroll down. Chicago Gardening Magazine, which for more than 10 years has been the Bible for dedicated gardeners in this area, is in the process of changing hands. Negotiations are underway for Bill Aldrich's Grow It Communications to sell the magazine to state-by-state publications based in Louisiana, which includes 10 garden magazines, including Carolina Gardener, Mississippi Gardener, and Louisiana Gardener. But the subscriptions to Chicagoland Gardening will continue. And it's going to continue to be focused on gardening in Chicago and in the Midwest with the same people, including, I hope, me as the voice of insanity on the back page. So, meanwhile, get a subscription for Christmas for your friends. Go online to chicagolandgardening.com or give the office a call, 866-806-1498. This year, give the gift of gardening. And with Christmas just about 12 days away, you'd better make that list and check it at least twice. Then count on the folks at Sid's Greenhouses and Garden Center to help you get through it with great gifts, plus home and party decor. Do yourself a favor this year and get a real florist quality poinsettia from Sid's Greenhouses. They deliver throughout the entire Chicagoland area, and in addition to poinsettias, they also have the best custom made-to-order floral gifts in Chicagoland and much, much more. So get your list of family, friends, and business associates together today. Call SIDS tomorrow, and it's done. SIDS can also help with home party decorating. Why not put a fresh centerpiece on your holiday table? Get it at SIDS, and you've just saved yourself some precious time during the crazy holiday season. Plus, SIDS' entire stock of decorations and ornaments is 50% to 75% off this week. Fresh cut trees, wreaths, and garlands are still available. I've talked about them this season, and if you want to go green, go real. SID, Chicagoland's premier garden centers are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassert Boulevard. The Mike Novak Show in Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Tell you what, let's get Rick DeMaio online. But you had a, and even before you do that, Heather, you had a question.
Well,
for
when you were reading about Sid's gardening and everything, I was curious about poinsettias because you always hear if they're poisonous and you shouldn't have them around your pets and your children. And I want to know if that was true.
Shauna, do you have a take on this?
They are poisonous. No pets, and cats love it.
Now, here's the thing. I have the opposite point of view. My research tells me they're not. All right,
oh.
And I have done this for years. They're not poisonous. They are really. I've seen people do demonstrations or read about people who do demonstrations. Well, they'll take a poinsettia of the leaves and start eating them, and just to prove that they're
really?
Not.
Really,
yeah.
I've always heard the opposite. So
it's a myth that continues to. I'll tell you what. Get Rick online.
Okay.
Then we'll go to Snopes.com.
Okay.
That's one place to look.
Ooh, find the myth.
Find the myth. The thing is. They are euphorbias, and all euphorbias have a sap that comes out. If you've got a pencil plant or some of the other euphorbias, some of the ones that look like cactuses, which are really euphorbias and not cactus, and you cut them, they bleed the sap, and it is an irritant to some people, and that's one of the things you have to be careful of. But from my research,
not
poisonous.
Possibly irritating.
Possibly irritating, but the idea that your plant, that your kids or your dog is going to die is just not true.
Well, I don't really much let my son run wild eating the house plants, so there I'm pretty safe. But
except when you're not looking.
Right. Well, he's never been, known to, just eat the house plants, so I'm lucky in that regard, I guess.
Yeah. but let's do that while we talk to meteorologist Rick DeMaio, who is... You're on line one today, Rick.
Oh, line one. I like line one.
Yeah. You feel comfortable on line one.
I feel comfortable. I have two hands.
Well, winter's here.
And with the vengeance, Mike, isn't it amazing how quickly it turned around?
And you know what? I took your advice last week. You said today was going to be the last Sunday. You said this is going to be the day to get your Christmas lights up.
Right,
and that's what I did.
Oh, it's good. It's good. It's nice when you listen to me, right?
It's point... hold on a second.
I've been spelling it incorrectly.
Yeah, there's an IA at the end.
Okay.
Heather's looking at poinsettias for me.
I just can't spell it.
She just can't spell it.
Or there's always disagreements on how to pronounce it as well. Some people say poinsettia, poinsettia.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Some people say exactly. I say poinsettia.
Or that red flower, that's a good one, right?
All right, here we are on Snopes.com. Here's the claim. Poinsettia plants are poisonous to humans. Status, false. Origins, have you ever read a warning like the following? Don't ever let your kids eat the poinsettias. They are deadly poisonous, and every year several poor, unsuspecting little ones are killed at Christmas time by taking just the slightest nibble from a poinsettia plant. Scary stuff. Luckily for us, it's not true.
Yay. I was wrong.
It's a persistent myth. It seems to have arisen long ago from a long-ago death of a child's being attributed to the wrong cause. It had its origin in 1919 when a 2-year-old child of an Army officer stationed in Hawaii died of poisoning, and the cause was incorrectly assumed to be a poinsettia leaf. And amazing, to this day, it persists.
Yeah, 1919, yeesh.
So we'll get back to that, but let's see, hold on. Let's scroll a little bit right there. Go down to the Minnesota Poison Control. The fact is, the Minnesota Poison Control System says, the fact is that poinsettias are not poisonous, nor are they edible, and it can be expected that when eaten in quantity, they may cause stomach upset with possible vomiting. This may happen when an overactive puppy devours an entire plant. In the case of a child who eats a single leaf, no ill effects would be expected. There we go.
So, Rick, no eating poinsettias for you.
First, I got to buy one.
Go to SIDS.
Yeah, exactly. So, getting back to... What?
Go on.
I was just going to say, last week, you said, go out, put the lights up. I put the lights up, and then it got cold.
Oh, yeah.
And
oh,
snowy. Yeah. That was... We dodged here in the city and south, as you predicted.
Right.
We
dodged
most of it.
Yeah, this was going to be one of those situations, Mike and Heather, where the storm track was basically... I should say the surface low was going to render the storm track to be pretty much just too far west for snow for Chicago proper. However, as I mentioned to a bunch of people, this was like a three-pronged event where we had that snow early Tuesday morning that kind of took everybody by surprise, and then we had that burst of like moderate to heavy wet snow and sleet in the afternoon, which actually came along with temperatures right around 33 to 34 degrees. And once again, that's good old Lake Michigan in your early December winter event, really complicating things because obviously the wind was off the lake. The lake is still about 42, well, at least last week was 42 degrees. And that basically took the rain-snow line and pushed it about 20 to 30 miles inland. So instead of getting snow... In the eastern half of Cook County, rain to snow, your rain snow line basically went all the way west of the Fox Valley. But, you know, where the Fox Valley to the Fox River is, you had anywhere between 6 and about 9 inches of snow. So out there, people still have a lot of snow to deal with. But then the rain, you know, the heavier snow went all the way up into Lake Geneva, southern areas of Wisconsin. Madison, Wisconsin had 14.5 inches, their sixth heaviest snowstorm ever. Green Bay reported about 15 inches. And then after that, obviously, the bone-chilling cold. So it really, I think all of a sudden people were saying, wait, it's too early for that, right? I'm like, no, we can get some pretty hellacious snowstorms in early December. But Mike, I actually forgot to tell you this, but prior to that snow, or prior to our conversation last weekend, I actually had flowers in my window boxes on my balcony up until the 3rd of December. It was amazing. I had not had a freeze yet on my balcony, which to me was amazing, because I don't know if you remember this, but the 1st of December, it was a Tuesday, we had sunshine and temperatures, I think it was about 56 or 57 degrees, and some of my impatience in my window boxes said, hey, this is nice, I'm going to come back out, and sure enough, they did. And I was taking pictures, and I sent them to the state climatologist, Jim Angel, who I actually saw the previous Friday at a seminar at NIU, and he said, when was this taken? I said, the other day. He's like, you got to be kidding me. I'm like, Jim, I live 30 feet up, about 50 feet from Lake Michigan, and I have not had a freeze yet. And he says, well, don't tell me that. Then I have to redraw my maps. So he obviously keeps track of all these things. He says, my God, that's, you know, I knew that urban gardening, as you were talking about earlier, you know, obviously has some benefits because the season, you know, while it may start a little bit later, you know, due to the cooler lake waters in April and early May, but it definitely extends much, much further into the season than most people think. And I think even when you take your urban gardening and you take it off the, you know, off the surface of the earth and bring it up into the balconies of some of these high rises adjacent to Lake Michigan that do not have a westerly exposure, and that's the key there, Mike, is you can really get probably in another, you know, 4 to 5 weeks out of it. And I think this is the great thing about living on the lakefront in the north side of Chicago, that sometimes people say, oh, well, you know, it's November, I'm going to let my stuff die. You don't have to. You can actually keep it going into early December and at some point or certain years. And I think my garden, if you want to call it that, was a testament to that. So I was pretty excited to tell Jim Angel about that.
Well, you know, I'm looking right now because I saw somebody either sent me or I found it this week. I get so many different articles and I can't remember where I get most of them. But talking about the corn crop still being in the fields in the midst of the snow.
That's the one I sent you.
That's the one you sent me. Okay,
all right,
great. All right, good.
I'm the guy on the phone right now who sent that to the mic.
I know. I do this all the time. Who sent me that? I can't remember who sent me that. And it was you. Okay, well, good. Then you can tell me what was in the article so I don't have to look it up.
Oh, great. This is like the teacher walking to the smartest kid in the first grade. Where did we leave off last week?
You know, the National Arboretum says we're now in Zone 6. How do you feel about that, Mike? Do you think that we are?
I think we've had this conversation before, Rick, and again, I always go back to one of the smartest guys I know in the world of horticulture, and that's Sean Kingzett from the Care of Trees. He says the problem with calling us Zone 6 is that you get a week like we just had, or you get a prolonged cold where we're zero, and you got a Zone 6 plant, it's a goner. So it's disingenuous at best to call us zone six. We're still zone 5.
You know, Rick had a good point, though. If you can make a subclimate, a microzone, you know, if you have a very sunny area, it can be a zone 6, mm-hmm. But you have to plant accordingly and be very careful.
Well, Mike, and this is what I was talking about, and you're correct about that, is that it's not so much change, but it's variability. You know, we're going to go from 5, we're going to go to 6, and as you mentioned, I'm on a 30 feet above the ground, I'm 50 feet from the lake, but more importantly, I do not have a western exposure. I have an eastern exposure, so I get a lot of sun in the morning. My balcony gets really warm. I'm protected from a strong west wind, so I can easily have plants. And if I wanted to, and I had some other sort of herbs or vegetables, I can bring them in on the nights where I think, it may get a little nip, and then bring them back out and have them go to the first week of December. So I was really, really excited about that. And the best thing about it was just 2 days later, I was with the state climatologist talking about this, because one of the things we were discussing, and Mike, this goes back to this class I was taking at NIU, Northern Illinois University, which was basically about applying research applications to climate projects for to a farmer in central Illinois. I did my project on wind energy, Xcel Energy, up in Minnesota and in Denver, trying to figure out when is too much wind too much. And some of the students did things about how to get the best corn from a particularly harsh season. In other words, if we can predict in advance whether it's going to be a drought season or a wet season, how do you change your hybrid accordingly? You know, your hybrid corn crop. And like, I think getting back to the article that I sent you was way back, I believe it was in late September when we had, not late September, it was in October, early October, when we had all that rain, we were talking about the fact that some farmers may actually go into the first week of December having to harvest their crop. And some people said, what, you got to be kidding me. And sure enough, this guy was right. Because
yeah.
of the fact that we had such a wet October, then we had such a dry November. It turned out to be one of the warmest and driest Novembers in the history of the state of Illinois.
Which had to help the farmers get caught up a little bit there. But, right. you know, the bottom was going to fall out at some point, and it did this
right.
week.
Right, right, right. And it did this week, but more importantly, I think getting back to what I was telling Jim Angel, state climatologist in Illinois, was it just seems that I think in the Chicagoland area, we have probably, you can probably get into zone 4, 4.5, 4.75, 5, 5.5, 5.75, 6, and 6.25, and 6.5. In other words, you just don't say, okay, well, it starts in April and ends in November, and that's it. You should really take advantage of where you live. And with the community gardening, again, it doesn't have to be in the ground. It could be, you know, above the ground. It could be on rooftops. And take advantage of that to some extent. And you know what? You feel like a little bit more of a pioneer when you do some things that the experts don't know about. That's the fun thing about it.
That's Rick DeMaio. He is my loquacious meteorologist every week on the Mike Novak Show at 8.
I'm going to Google that, that's for sure.
Okay, you do that. In the studio with me is Shauna Coronado as well. And we're just about to do the forecast here. So we get socked this week. What's the pattern and where are we going this week?
You know what, Mike? It's interesting because people said, how did it get this cold? And I said, you know what? It got this cold because it was this warm in November. When you have a very mild pattern that lasts for about 4 weeks, which is what happened in the month of November, basically coast to coast, what happened was you kept all this cold air across northern sections of North America. And I was looking at this a while ago. I'm like, oh, my God, this air is just frigid across Canada and up into North America, up and towards the North Pole, generally north of about 70 degrees latitude. And all I kept saying was, all you need is one deep trough and one big snowstorm, and this stuff will just pour down. That's exactly what it did. So we kind of emptied the Arctic, so to say. A lot of that air went all the way down in the southern areas of Texas. So the snow last week in Houston, which was incredible once again, that's their second snow in a couple of years. And people say, oh, look, no more global warming because we had snow in Houston. Wrong. Because oddly enough, NOAA just posted temperatures for the month of November way above average across much of the United States. And so far for the year, 2009 global temperatures, once again, above average. It looks like it's going down as the fifth warmest on record. And again, it's one of these things where you just can't look at what's happening in your own backyard. You have to look globally. So the bottom line is we emptied the Arctic. We got rid of the real cold air for a while. We had a little bit of light freezing drizzle and light drizzle last night. I think all that is off to the east now. So cloudy today, temperatures mid-30s. Overcast tomorrow, temperatures in the mid-30s, and they'll probably get a little bit of light rain, maybe a little bit of mixed snow late tomorrow before another cold front comes through. But the Arctic air that comes through late tomorrow is really just the southern edge of this next poke of Arctic air. In fact, in parts of southern Canada right now, Manitoba, Saskatchewan, they had low temperatures yesterday of about 25 to 30 below zero and high temperatures of about 20 to 25 below zero. Is that cold? But all
wow.
that is actually moving from west to east. That's pretty cold stuff.
Yeah.
So we get into a bit of a break. I don't see anything real cold now, which is good, between now and probably next week. And if we see any light snow, we may not see that again until probably next Sunday. So overcast today, overcast tomorrow, both days probably mid-30s. The cold front probably hits late tomorrow afternoon, so you're really going to feel it on Tuesday, probably early morning temperatures, lower teens, afternoon highs both Tuesday and Wednesday, probably only the mid-20s, maybe even only the lower 20s, depending on how much snow we have in the ground, because snow obviously changes everything. Reflects the sunlight back out. It keeps the heat from the ground under the snow, and essentially that little layer of snow actually keeps the air cool. So it cools things up in three different ways. So sunshine Wednesday and Thursday, And then probably back up to above freezing on Friday and maybe even to Saturday as well. So nothing in the way of any real cold or snow anytime soon. And I always remember some of these things that the weathermen from back in the 60s and 70s on TV used to tell you. By just looking at weather maps over a long period of time, it's really tough to get two big snowstorms back to back within a week to 7 day period, or week to 10 day period of time. And that's certainly going to bear out because there's one that just passed us is basically gone now, obviously. So pretty much quiet weather between now and probably the next 7 days, Mike.
And then, so that makes your prognosis for a white Christmas kind of iffy?
Oh, I don't know about that. I mean, that's still 2 weeks away. I'm not gonna.
Okay, I won't even go there. We'll go there next week. How's that?
Yeah, I'm gonna do like I did when I was a kid, which was as soon as there was snow outside, I would take the snow, put it in a big bowl or something, freeze it. And when it was December 25th, because I grew up in New York City, there wasn't much snow even when it did snow. And you threw it on the ground and said, "Hey, look, we got a white Christmas." By that time, it was more like a gray Christmas, but. We'll hold up on the prognostication next week. How about that?
All right, sounds great. That's Rick DeMaio. You can get his forecasts at DeMaioWeather.com. You can also go to my website, the homepage, MikeNowak.net, MikeNowak. And we will talk to you. Oh, you know, next week I got my big holiday extravaganza. I don't really know what I'm doing yet. But it's the holiday extravaganza. So, did you do a talent last year?
No, I think my talent was I stay home.
That might be it. All right. Well, I think you should come up with a talent for next week.
Okay, you let me know what I should do, and I'll once again
a tap dance, which is what you do really well anyway. So
garden nude.
He could. Yeah, you could garden nude.
I don't think I'm
going to
do that.
Okay.
So now it is this cold.
We managed to silence Rick DeMaio.
Wow.
All right, I'll talk to you next week, Rick.
Take care, Mike.
Bye-bye. This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. And you're hearing us on 820 and at 92.7, 92.5, 99.9 South. Some of you are on the Internet. You're always welcome to call 773-838-9278, 773-838-WCPT. We will get right back to Shauna Coronado after I give you a tip from the Care of Trees. Did you know that in 2009, the Care of Trees was recognized for the fifth year as a company that cares this year? 37 organizations were named nationwide. Honor roll recipients are selected for their deep commitment to elevating the quality of the work environment for their employees and the quality of life for people in the broader community. The honor roll is selected by an independent panel of veteran professionals in a variety of industries. Each of the organizations selected sustains a work environment founded on dignity and respect for all employees, develops great leaders, communicates standards of ethics and integrity, and participates in initiatives that support the community. Now, all you got to do is listen to Tom Kroc last week and Sean Kingzett from the Care of Trees. Great people. Come down, volunteer their time. Sean's helped me in the neighborhood. He's been associated with MELA, the Midwest Ecological Landscaping Association, on and on. These are the kind of people that are at the Care of Trees and why you should call the Care of Trees when you need help with the trees in your yard. Whether you want to make sure all is well with those trees or you're changing your landscaping, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees.
How to look at an image. Why is it the most popular feature on the One History website? Using multicultural photographs, this remarkable teaching tool takes students and teachers step by step through the process of seeing, interpreting, and using photographs and other images. It provides information on where historical images can be found online and provides discussion questions that help you get the most out of an image. Check out the website at www.onehistory.org. That's www.onehistory.org. Or if you want us to work with your students directly, we can do a presentation at your school. Call us at 216-956-6300. 216-956-6300.
Whirly bird.
The news is out and I've been told it came by wire from the great North Pole. I'm sure each boy and girl he heard Santa Claus has got a new whirly bird. Santa's coming in a whirly bird. Christmas night in a whirly.
Now, do you know who that is?
I know that voice. I'm just wondering,
Shauna,
that very question.
Any idea?
It is the same man who is on all the childhood cartoons from the 70s.
He turned his reindeer up.
Mustache, goatee, and Frosty the Snowman.
I don't. Oh, you're thinking
Burl Ives? No, that's not Burl Ives.
Oh, yeah.
No, this is this is pre Burl Ives.
Wow.
I know this voice. It's not Johnny Marks.
So if you're good and you don't move, the whirly bird's gonna land on.
Okay.
Oh, it's killing me.
773-838-9278. You tell me who this voice is and tell Heather, and I'll give you something. I'll give you a book. Maybe we. How about a copy of Gardening Nude?
I would love to do that.
All right. You'll get a copy of Gardening Nude with Shauna's smiling picture there on the cover.
773-838-9278, if you know it. 773-838-9278.
Let's hear the voice one more time. God, this is the weirdest song. Let us, if you know who that is, I may have to play it again, so we'll save it here. 773-838-9278. So, what else, Shauna? I mean, what are you telling people for the holidays other than, you know?
Oh, well, there's a lot of stuff going on for me. My big push, you know, is conservation and saving money and doing that sort of thing, working with positive environmental action. But one of the things I'm trying to get people to do for the holidays is to save on their electricity. And I have my top 10 tips for reducing energy usage in your home. Can we go over my top 10 tips?
Yeah, let's
maybe
do
we can
that.
Help some
is
people
this,
save some money.
Is this something that people will find on your website? And if so, which site? Because you got so many of them.
It is. It's on Gardening Nude, the blog. And it's a blog that was written about 2 weeks ago. And what I'm focusing on is trying to get people to cut back a little bit during the holidays. So the first way to save energy and electricity in your home is to audit your household so you can understand how much energy you're actually using.
I had an energy audit about last year.
Did you do it through the utility companies because it's free?
No.
Okay, hold on. Now you can go through the utility company.
Will they do as serious an audit as you would get a private person or
no.
a private company? No.
No.
What will the utility companies do?
You know, they come out and do a whole overview of what your electrical usage is. But you know what? Let me give you a tip. This is the easiest way to find out how much energy you're using if you're having a problem. You keep track of it yourself. You go out and watch the numbers. And the reason I say do it yourself and watch the numbers yourself is it's amazing when you get your electrical bill back that sometimes the numbers don't match up. So it's always a good thing. So first, make sure you know what you're really using monthly by checking yourself regularly. You know, heating and air conditioning is actually the number one consumer of energy in your home. So turning the thermostat down 4 degrees... and utilizing an automated Energy Star thermostat, if you're able to, is like the number one way that you can save energy. Do you have an automatic?
Oh, yeah, yeah. The minute we bought our house, I put in a programmable thermostat, and it's in the day in our house, it's set to 63.
Wow.
That's what my father does for a living. Anyway. Oh. He says everybody should have a programmable thermostat.
We
everybody.
Have it to 68 and 70, and I have to say I'm freezing. I have a home office. So
I have 63 in the day, 58 at night.
That's quite chilly, my friend.
I know.
You're down.
thoughtful.
You are from Detroit, Mike.
You're definitely, there's no walking around nude in your house.
All right, let's quickly go through the other tips. We've got about a minute left.
Yeah, the lines lit up.
Okay, so replace all your traditional light bulbs with LEDs. That's an easy one, or CFLs. Turn off the lights, air conditioner, and furnace when not in use. Beware of vampire power and unplug your wall warts and your standby electronics. Water heating is the third largest consumption of energy in your home, so insulate your water heater. Seal air leaks with the storm window covers and avoid using your fireplace because it sucks out all the heat in your home. Close doors, especially at night, in all the bedrooms. And finally, weatherize your home by insulating the attic and sealing the leaks.
And those are all great tips, and you can find those at
GardeningNude.com.
Now,
yes.
we asked people who this was. Are you prepared to give away 5 books?
5 books? Well, you're Mr. Pushy. Yes, I can.
I'm not going to make you do it. We could go for the
I would love to give away 5 books.
Because everybody got the answer right. Who called first?
Bernie did.
Bernie, let's go to line one. And Bernie!
Yeah, how you doing this morning? Hey, I already got a magazine, so I don't know if you want to get.
Well, no, we're going to send you a copy of Gardening Nude.
It's my book. It's about environmentalism.
Oh, okay. It's really, and it's about environmentalism and being healthy.
It's a
and
guide.
Happy. It, yeah, yes. Kind of a guide, and it walks you through some of the things that Shauna did to be a happier, healthier person. Who was singing that song, Bernie?
Gene Artery.
Gene Artery. Well, that's close enough. Gene Autry.
Right.
I like Gene Artery better.
Yeah. Can you take it, Mike?
What?
I got a tip.
Quickly.
Okay, in Mother Earth news, to put on bubble wrap on your windows makes a lot of sense.
All right. Very good. I like that.
We will look that up. So the deal is Gene Autry wrote that song. Bernie, Rick, Gene, Karsten, and Gene are all getting copies of Shauna Coronado's books. So you hang on there, Bernie. Thank you all for calling. I can't believe everybody got it, but they recognized Gene Autry.
Shauna Coronado,
thank you so much for being on the show.
Absolutely.
GardeningNude.com. Go check it out. Mick Dumke from the Chicago Reader is coming in at 9 o'clock in just a few minutes. We're talking recycling and what's going on in the city. Sometimes the answers aren't pretty. Stick around for that.
Welcome back to the Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by SIDS Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees, and by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes since 1997. Podcasts of this program, along with green tips, valuable links, and DeMaio weather, are a click away at MikeNovak.net. That's MikeNovak.net. Here he is, Mike Novak.
Second big hour, and the man of the hour, Mick Dumke, in studio. You know, you are just a media giant. You're all over the airwaves, aren't you? You go from that little station down on Michigan Avenue there and with the big showcase windows.
That's a little speck of a station. No one knows they're out there.
And then you come
down to the real radio station.
The money's just so good in radio as a volunteer guest that who can resist?
Mick Dumke writes for the Chicago Reader, covers the political beat, but one of the things I like about you is that you pay particular attention to the environment in the political beat, and you combine the two, which is fascinating. And I appreciate your efforts. I hope that other people do too. We're talking to him for a little while here about some of that. But I want to get quickly back to, because we ran out of time in the last hour. Oh, and by the way, later in the show, as I mentioned earlier, Eric Hansen, will be on, to talk about propane fuel. He's with Competitive Lawn Care, Inc., and he's doing something this week that has never been done. He's driving from Detroit to Chicago in the very first Roush Ford F-350 propane truck. The wave of the future, maybe, or past. I don't know. You know, it's a wave of something. And we're going to talk about the value of propane. He's converted his company, all of the power tools to propane. And he says you can actually run that stuff indoors. It's kind of cool. So, but back to Gene Autry, because that Heather was like, I know that voice. And maybe you should look this up because, all right, he did popularize Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, right?
Yes.
And I think he also did Here Comes Santa Claus.
Yes, he did.
Right.
Now,
I don't know if he wrote that one. You say, who wrote the Rudolph?
Johnny Marks.
Johnny Marks. And I'm not sure if he wrote Here Comes Santa Claus. So let's see that. But obviously, you know, he was called the Singing Cowboy. And obviously he went off the rails at one point, and Santa's coming in a whirly bird came out of the studio. And did you catch that, Mick?
I did not catch that.
You didn't catch Santa's coming in a whirly bird, huh?
Yeah, he did Here Comes Santa Claus as well. That was another one he did. He did
right.
A lot of Christmas songs.
Yeah. I think he made most of his money doing Christmas. He must have. You know, for some people, I mean, you know, Andy Williams. You know, look at all the money he made doing Christmas carols. It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Unfortunately, I know the Andy Williams Christmas repertoire all too well. It was sort of a family staple growing up. So,
did you all wear turtleneck sweaters under the tree, too? Or was that the Osmonds? You know, that was but it was Andy Williams and the Osmonds.
Ouch!
Oh, yeah.
Ouch!
Oh, come on.
No.
Yeah. If you lived through the 60s, you saw Andy Williams and the Osmonds when the Osmonds were just, they were kids, you know. And they sounded more like a barbershop quartet than, you know, winning Dancing with the Stars kind of thing. So, all right. So we got the Gene Autry thing out of the way. That was fun. Maybe we have to do another one. I may play another one and see if we can. I have to get somebody who's well known and see if we can get people to guess who it is. I got a few more of these, so we'll look through that. All right. Mick Dumke is here. Wow. Where do we start? Let's start with the budget, okay? Because
sure.
The city of Chicago, and as I mentioned before, he writes for the Reader, Cloud City. I've got the link up on MikeNovak.net if you go to this week's show. You've been following the budget process, which was about as ugly as it gets this year, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think the outcome is about as ugly as it gets, certainly. But yeah, the couple weeks ago, the city council passed the 2010 budget, pretty much the budget that the mayor and his administration proposed, and I think the signature feature of it, if you hadn't heard already, is that the city's going to use, you know, even more money from the parking meter funds that it brought in when it privatized the meter system. And so most of the $1.2 billion that the city brought in for the 75-year term of that deal are going to be used up by the end of next year. So,
well, he didn't say, okay, that, well, it, you know, he didn't say he's using all of it. I mean, he's using...
Well, he said he's not using all of it, but
well, I know
most of it will
be used up. No, that's okay. Actually, I've seen some of the figures on it. Maybe it was what you guys wrote at the Reader. When you look at what you could have accrued in interest over the years by not dipping into it or just taking a little bit of it, it's almost criminal. I mean, it's certainly short-sighted.
Well, it's a problem because you know, whatever you feel politically about the whole privatization idea,
and nobody likes it. Come on, everybody hates it. Let's face it; it was one of the dumber things to come out of City Hall in decades.
But the way they sold it was saying that we're going to put a portion of the proceeds into a bank account that will be drawing interest, and we'll be able to make as much from the interest as we were making from the whole meter system previously, which is about $20 million a year. Of course, when you take that money out of the account to spend it on a one-term you know, one-time budget shortfall, then you don't get that interest. So that's the problem, is that the revenues that the city had previously been generating, you know, from the meter system, we're not going to have anymore. So
you're just making
not only do not have control of the meters, but you don't have the money coming in. So where are you going to get that $20 million a year?
You're making me ache just you know, hearing this. I know where. Let's get it from the TIFs.
Well, I think that's a proposal that some people would actually prefer. And, of course, the TIFs are these special taxing districts spread around the city and what are supposedly blighted areas, but that includes portions of the Loop, you know, that include things like the Sears Tower, Willis Tower, whatever you want to call it. So not exactly a blighted area. But there's, you know, about $500 million a year coming into these special accounts, and some people, including some aldermen now, are saying, let's start using some of this money to get us through our budget shortfall instead of raiding these long-term reserve
funds. That even possible? I mean, the tax incremental funds here. You need...
Yeah, pardon me. I'm finding a little bit of a cold.
Oh,
so
great. Don't touch me. Don't get anywhere near me, okay, pal?
Anyone who hears me sniffling, I'm sure will be really turned on here.
You know, and I make them come down on a Sunday morning.
I know, the things I do.
I know. It's just...
This media fame that you are describing, right?
Believe me, it's fleeting, okay? Is it even possible that the tax incremental funds could be used? I guess part of the problem with them is that they're kind of a floating fund and nobody really knows what they're going to be used for.
Yeah, that's correct. Although I believe that state law, you know, necessitates that they be used in the district where the money was generated or in a neighboring district. You can move it from one TIF area to the next through a process called porting. So you cannot currently just pull the money out of there and put it into general operating expenses or anything. So I think
it's probably not usable in that regard.
Well, not directly, but I mean, I think the undercurrent here, the you know, sort of the just the whole assumption is that if Mayor Daley wanted to, he could get some folks down in Springfield to amend the law, even for, you know, a temporary period of time, you know, to make this work. So,
And we should probably there are probably folks out there who are kind of unclear of the whole idea of how a TIF works. Can you give it to me in like two words or less?
Probably not two words, but yeah, like I said, special taxing district, designated areas of the city that the city council sets aside and says, essentially that from that point forward for the next two and a half decades, all the extra taxes that come in are going to go into a special account. And that money from that special account is supposed to be used for economic development. That, in a nutshell, is what the TIF program is supposed to be.
And part of the problem, as you said, is that it should be used in that district. But the other thing is that it's frozen for 20-something years.
Right. It's frozen for 24 or 25 years what other taxing bodies can get out of that district. So if the schools are bringing in $100, you know, when a TIF district is created, that's all that they can bring in, you know, for the rest of the period of the life of the TIF. So the net effect is generally because, as you may have noticed, the schools and the park district and so forth are not lowering the amount of tax they need each year. The net effect is that taxes go up on everybody across the board. So when the TIF districts collectively are bringing in $500 million a year, that's $500 million in an extra, you know, an extra taxation that's shared by the taxpayers of Chicago.
All right, that's our background. This is where we start. All right, in light of that and the money problems we have and the TIFs with freezing some funds that might be available to the city, we've got this budget that gets passed, which has, with the city facing a $500 million deficit. Interestingly, 12 aldermen voted against it.
They did, which is the most, the highest number, you know, since I think the early days of the mayor's tenure. So that passes as a result, as a revolt in today's city council.
It sure does. It's the closest thing we're going to get. So we will get to the story now of how this affects your recycling and environmental matters in the city of Chicago, and we will do it in just a second. That's Mick Dumke from the Chicago Reader. This is the Mike Novak Show. If you've got questions about recycling, Blue Cart, what's going on in the city, because we're going to be talking about it, call us, 773-838-9278. We would be happy to talk to you. Since 1997, WRD Environmental has been creating healthy, sustainable landscapes that are both beautiful and responsible to future generations. You could say WRD is in the business of transformation. Sometimes it's through projects like the Lincoln Park South Pond, for which WRD is part of a team that is turning the zoo's popular pond into a model for sustainable landscape solutions, habitat restoration, and environmental learning. Other times it's through leadership and organizations like the Midwest Ecological Landscaping Association, which is working to green up the landscape industry so that sustainable design materials and methods are the professional standard. Sometimes the transformations are of people themselves. WRD is a partner with the Chicago Department of the Environment in managing Green Core Chicago, which provides job training in the green industry, electronics, recycling, and home weatherization. For innovative, sustainable transformations, choose WRD Environmental, located at the Chicago Center for Green Technology, and online at WRDEnvironmental.com.
Cafe Bella is Logan Square's newest great restaurant. High-end chef Cesar Casas, formerly of Ambria, prepares fresh, wholesome, but decadently delicious food. From the pulled pork sandwich for lunch to the tilapia provençal for dinner. The atmosphere is relaxed. There's free Wi-Fi. BYOB. Cafe Bella, 3311 West Fullerton, just east of Kimball. Go to cafebellaonline.com or call 773-292-5040. Cafe Bella, for gourmet healthy eating.
I love Christmas time. 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 Christmas time is here.
It wasn't the one I was going to play, but...
That's a good one, though. I like it.
They're all good.
It's put me in the spirit.
That's right. Nothing says Christmas like a polka, if you ask me. But then I'm Polish, and you're in the same ballpark, right?
German. So
close enough.
Yeah.
Except you guys ran us over with tanks. So yeah.
Just a couple times.
Have you apologized for that yet? Mick Dumke from the Chicago Reader. Okay, so we got this budget, which is, I don't know, smoke and mirrors. And part of what we find out, and what I found interesting is that everything has been almost off the record about the Blue Cart. It's like nobody's come out and said, well, this is going to stop, and this is going to go forward, and you know, it's you got to glean it and get little nuggets from people who work in the city. But the upshot is that the rollout of Blue Cart is going to be suspended for at least what do you think, the year or a few months?
I think the city hasn't been committal about exactly when that's how long that's going to go on,
and that's part of the problem.
Foreseeable future. I mean, what I was told is we make announcements about when we're going to expand it when we make announcements. So a real direct answer there, but yeah, I mean, your point is well made. The blue, everyone who's served by city garbage crews is supposed to have blue carts by 2011, right?
And right.
So
Well, that ain't going to happen.
No, it doesn't. We don't have half the city who's covered yet, and this rollout has been going on for a couple years already, so it does not look like, barring something strange, it does not look like it's going to happen by 2011.
As a matter of fact, the Blue Cart, 2008, they did a pilot program in Beverly neighborhood. It went well, so they decided, yes, we'll pull the plug on Blue Bag about time, and then started rolling out Blue Carts. And now I know about this because I'm the president of the Chicago Recycling Coalition, in the interest of full disclosure. And people ask me all the time, and certainly through our Facebook page, and I encourage you, if you are on Facebook, to become a fan of the CRC, the Chicago Recycling Coalition. We cracked 1,000 just yesterday. I'm very excited. So, we're going to get we'll get a few thousand in there, and then we'll just have our own blue cart party. I don't know what we're going to do yet, but do some kind of action. But the point is that 240,000 units got rolled out, and we're talking individual homes or buildings with four or fewer units. There are 600,000 of those in the city. I think you had some numbers that said 750.
They don't actually have a firm number. At least they've not given it to me. So I've heard anywhere from 600,000 to 750,000 households. Yeah.
So at this point, somewhere in the neighborhood of 40%, maybe 30% of blue carts have been rolled out. And that's going to stop because there's no more money. So all the people who write to the CRC Facebook page or call me or talk to me and they say, when are we getting blue cart? I'm going to say, I don't know.
And I think you're being a little generous. I think that the pilot in Beverly actually was in about started in like 2006. I mean, so this
has
been going on. The slow evolution from blue bags to blue carts. You know, from what was by everyone's, I think, conclusion at this point, a failed recycling effort with the blue bag program to a single stream, you know, modern recycling program has taken already, you know, 3+ years. And so we may be at 5+ before this thing actually is finished.
Yeah, I when they started rolling it out. And you're right. The Beverly program was like 2006 into 2007 or something like that. And then the decision was made to go forward in 2000. And I think
they had 4 or 5 wards for a while then.
Yeah,
right. To try different parts of the city to see what it was like in, you know, different kinds of communities and so forth. So
here we are and frozen in time with some of the city having blue cart recycling. And even that, according to the rumors we hear, and again, we haven't had, one of the things I hope to do as president of the Chicago Recycling Coalition is to call the recycling czar, Chris Sauvé, and the Streets and Sand Commissioner and the Department of the Environment and say, we need a meeting. So you can tell us outright what is going on. I want to know, and the city, more importantly, the citizens want to know what the deal is. They don't want to have to glean it from, you know, a newspaper article where it's buried in the middle someplace. And this is not to denigrate the people who are reporting on it. It's just, it's hard to get the information.
Well, few people actually understand, you know, how recycling works or doesn't work in the city. I mean, you know, you and I, insofar as we understand it, I think are, you know, among the few who do. And so, you know, even folks I've talked to who live in high-rise, you know, apartments or multi-unit apartments, you know, have asked me, oh, so when am I going to get blue cart? And, you know, the answer is you're not. If you don't live in a building or a home that's served by city, you know, sanitation crews, your private collector is supposed to be providing recycling services.
Which gets us yet to another issue that you and I have talked about on this show. Yeah, when you talk blue cart, you're talking about homes, individual homes, or, again, buildings with 4 units or less.
Right.
When you're talking high rises, it's a completely different animal because with blue cart, that is streets and sand. With the high rises, it's private, whatever private contractor you can get.
Exactly, right.
So you're kind of on your own. Well,
whatever.
The building manager or owner.
Right, whatever waste hauler your building manager owner contracts with to pick up your garbage.
Now, this is, and there's actually an ordinance on the books. What they call Burke-Hansen was passed in 1993,
right?
Which, unfortunately, has not been enforced in all these years, and that's why and you hear different things about recycling rates in Chicago. The estimate is that the high rises have about a 5% recycling rate, maybe.
Right? It can, 5 to 10%.
Who
I
knows?
Think is what you know the EPA estimated in a recent study. So it's low, whatever the actual number
really
is.
Not
we
good.
Can
okay.
say that it's
all right,
very
maybe it's
low.
Not as low as 5, but it's not good. In fact, you and I didn't talk about this, but I saw an article in one of the waste newsletters, and this is what happens when you get in this. You start reading waste
of
newsletters.
Course, right.
It's just scary. You know?
I do as well. So,
it's just, but it said it was about a program going on in Detroit. trying to get people to recycle. And it touted, yeah, well, in cities like L.A. and Chicago, recycling's over 50%. And I nearly choked when I read that.
Well, I think if you measure it by the weight of the waste and what's recycled, I do believe Chicago is over 50%, but that includes construction and demolition,
right,
debris,
yeah,
which
C&D
obviously
stuff.
Skews things when you have, you know, a big truckload of concrete that's a little heavier than a truckload of plastic bottles.
And, so, and to give the city credit, that has been one of their great achievements.
Absolutely.
Is the construction and demolition recycling, which is like 75% or something.
Right. It's, I mean, Chicago is actually a national leader in you know, promoting C&D recycling. And so, you know, kudos to city officials and to the, you know, business leaders who have made that work here. And, you know, a few months ago, I actually toured a C&D recycling facility on the south side. It's amazing. I mean, it's sophisticated operation. You just, you know, dump this stuff on conveyor belts and it's all done through, you know, through physics. It sorts itself, essentially. I mean, things like, you know, they dump the waste in water, and what sinks is concrete or rock, and what floats is wood and other stuff. And so, you know, it's things like that.
No, you can go ahead, blow your nose. That's Mick Dumke blowing his nose here in the studio. He writes for the Chicago Reader, and we are talking recycling in Chicago. 773-838-9278 if you want to weigh in. So there, it's interesting that you can make that work, but I think you can, because you can tell industry what to do, and it's the other kind of recycling, the home recycling, is more like herding cats, you know.
It really seems that the principle should be pretty similar. I mean, you get a buy-in from business and industry. You show them how there is this is not only the right thing to do, but there's a market for it. There's a business opportunity, and people respond. And then you put legislation in place to, you know, make people do it. So there's a sort of a carrot and a stick, and you get everyone, you know, all the stakeholders involved, and it ends up working. And it seems like the same thing could happen with regular household recycling.
So to recap so far, blue cart is stalled. We won't see any more blue carts in any more neighborhoods. If you don't have it now, you're not going to get it anytime soon. And it's even possible that they will cut back on the number of pickups. That they might go from every 2 weeks to every 3 weeks. And I would think if that happens, then there has to be some kind of official notice, which we haven't. Now, the budget, in all fairness, just got passed.
Right.
So Streets and Sand is going to have to gear up and figure out what it is they're going to do, and then make an official announcement about it. So I would hope that there is one forthcoming. But the thing is, we're all sitting here, and we've seen this train wreck coming for a couple of months now, and so it's no reason that we're talking about it, because we already know what you're going to tell us. We don't know the exact details, but we have a pretty good idea. And so you and I and other people just want to just get it out. Just tell us, all right?
That's right.
Just have the press conference. Tell us so we can ask you questions or have a meeting. Like I said, there was a blue card advisory committee, which, as far as I know, hasn't met in months. With good reason, because they, you know, and then there's the whole issue of the multi-unit, which is going to continue to be up in the air.
Right. There's been some conversation about rewriting that law. You mentioned a moment ago the Burke-Hansen ordinance, which requires recycling in multi-unit buildings, and so there's been some conversation about toughening that up in some way, but I'm, as far as I understand, you know, that's been stalled as well.
Well, okay. All right. You're leading me down that path, aren't you, Mick?
But I sure am.
You are. That's okay. That's his job. He's a reporter. And he knows that I went to those committee meetings. Yeah, it was not pretty. It was, you know, the old making sausages. At the beginning of this year, there was a task force that was assigned to sit down and rewrite Burke-Hansen so that multi-unit buildings could be recycled. I sat in on almost all of those meetings, and nothing got done. Nothing got done. And they, was they gave up.
Was that just because too many people with too many conflicting interests or what? Lack of political will? I mean, what's your take on why that
My
exactly
take on
stalled?
It is a combination of those, but mainly that there was no driving force. A couple of the aldermen wanted this to happen, and I say, you know, good on them that they did. And there needed to be a firmer hand in the direction of the went because that this went because the waste hauling interests were in the room, the environs were in the room, the politicos were in the room, and a few odds and ends. And we're not all on the same page.
Right.
And so somebody had to say, well, this is the route we're going to go down. And it kind of descended into chaos. And then so at that point, somebody just threw their hands up in the air and said, this is not working. We're not going to make this happen now. And so they just stopped having meetings.
Well, it's pretty clear the whole thing has been that the city is really struggling to try to figure out a coherent policy there. Because remember, it was just about a year ago, city officials started just floating this idea. Really, I think it took a lot of people by surprise in all those sectors that you just mentioned, where they were basically saying, let's divide the city up into zones, and everybody in a zone gets the same waste hauler and the same recycler. And you know, obviously the waste hauling.
You're talking about business,
the franchises,
yeah.
And the waste hauling, you know, business obviously flipped out because they're, you know, they've got a good thing going as things are now. I think a lot of building managers flipped out because they thought, you know, that's going to eliminate their opportunity to negotiate the best deal for their own building. And a lot of environmentalists were very skeptical because they thought, oh, now the city's going to get involved in deciding, you know, private franchise, you know, private firms that are going to be working for multi-unit buildings. It just sounds like a bad idea because they've done, you know, such a great job managing recycling with their own segments of the waste stream, right? So, you know, so everyone revolted against that idea, the franchise idea, and I think that it seems to me, you know, talking with city officials ever since, that they've just really been struggling for an answer ever since. They haven't figured out one.
It is, and yet, you sent me an article the other day where Los Angeles is now touting its rolling out over 1 million blue bins, including to people in apartment buildings.
Right.
I mean, they're covering the whole city. New York has an effective recycling program. They don't even use blue bins. They just, you mark whatever container you have, as far as I know.
Exactly.
Right?
You put a sticker on it or something else to indicate this one is the recyclables, and they take it that way.
And if you don't,
if you're throwing away stuff and they find bottles and other goodies in your regular garbage, they'll leave you a nasty note, and if that doesn't work, they'll start fining you.
Well, so. And that's the point, whole point about Burke Hansen, the multi-unit recycling ordinance, you know, that is now 16 years on the books. It was never enforced.
Right.
And that is the knock against it, that should have been enforced by the city. Now, we have danced around this to some degree because we talked the city this and the council that, and everybody knows that anything that happens in the city is a result of one person, and that is the guy sitting in the mayor's seat, all right?
Yeah, if there's the political will there, it will get done.
Right. And there has not been a political will. So I'm willing to make a deal with Mayor Daley, which is, I will give him my own personal green award if he will get recycling in the city. But if he doesn't, then he has to turn back all of the green awards he's been given over the years. Okay, I mean, I like trees too. I think it's great. I love flowers. The C&D is great, but there's been no political will on recycling for average citizens, and I see it every day where people are crying out for this. They're frustrated. They want to, you know, they want to be able to take a can of Coke and put it someplace where it doesn't end up in a landfill.
Well, as you and I have mentioned before, it's really, I mean, obviously we both are very passionate about recycling in particular, but I think it's really a gateway, you know, a gateway into environmental activism. It's sort of like if you're not thinking about how to be resourceful with the waste you're producing, then, you know, that's really the heart of sort of living in a sustainable lifestyle on the planet. And so it's kind of like recycling in most places now is considered a basic city service. And
yeah.
Here people are still fighting to even understand, you know, how they can do it on their own.
And I'm not saying that you can't, because there are drop-off locations, but come on. Not everybody has a car.
Right.
You know, a lot of people can't even get to them. And it has recycling to be effective has to be convenient as well.
And people have to know how to do it. I mean, you have to have a serious education campaign that goes along with it. You can't just put the bins there and say, hey, everybody, do it. You know, I mean, people have to understand, you know, why they should be invested in this, how to do it, what the, you know, what the results are, you know. And I just don't think the city has done a good job educating people, getting people to buy in.
Well, the problem is we wasted 17 years with Blue Bag, or right. or 15 years, however, you know, whatever. Whatever the exact number of years is, you know, that's why I have little sympathy for people saying, well, we've run out of money, we can't roll out more blue carts. And I'm going to say, you wasted millions of dollars for 15 years on a program that everybody knew from the get-go did not work. But you thought it was, you're going to do it on the cheap, maybe it had to do with the contractors you had, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And as you pointed out, Mick, recently, the transfer stations they built for Blue Bag are probably going to be sold by the city, so once again, it's the big giveaway.
Yeah, they're right now the city, you know, has them contracted out to a private operator and wants to do that again, but has tried to lease them out in the same way that we've leased out the parking meters and the Skyway. And, you know, that no, we had no takers, and so the city is sort of temporarily sitting on it, but is going to try to do that again when market conditions improve. So, you know, and we spent a lot of money building. We spent about $60 million building those four facilities, one of which we ended up giving away to Waste Management anyway as part of some sort of, you know, deal when we exited, you know, a contract with them in the 90s. So we still have three of them. They were sophisticated when they were built in the early 90s. Now, not so much, and so the city's trying to lease them on.
They're not even, as you wrote out in your article, they're not even that useful anymore because they got conveyor belts that were used for that technology, the Blue Bag technology, that now just get in the way.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, you can get real wonky real fast here, but if anyone has ever had the wonderful opportunity of being at a waste transfer facility, which is the place where garbage trucks go and they dump their stuff before it's loaded onto another truck that's taken to the landfill. And in a waste transfer facility, it's basically just a big warehouse. It's usually a big open space where this stuff is literally dumped on the floor and then, you know, picked up again. But these, you know, recycling and waste sorting facilities that the city owns are... they were designed to sort out blue bags, so you could put all the trash on conveyor belts, and human beings could go there and grab, you know, blue bags and other recyclables they could see, could essentially grab them off of the conveyor belt. So, you know, it's to the point where now that's not really sophisticated enough. The new modern recycling sorting centers use all sorts of stuff. They use laser, they use magnets and all this other stuff that's much more sophisticated, but yet, you know, these things aren't really equipped to just be regular old waste transfer facilities either. So you're kind of right in the middle. Your technology's passing you by, but you're stuck with these capital projects that, you know, we the people paid for with $60 million.
Yeah. All right. Last but not least, I'm sorry, you folks, if you're listening and going, what the heck?
Well, I always feel like at this point we should jump in and remind folks that, you know, nothing happens without political pressure, but yeah, lots can happen with it. I mean, even in Mayor Daley's Chicago, you know, elected officials have to be responsive to citizens. So if you're unhappy about the things we're saying, if you're unhappy with us, whatever. I mean, I think the whole point of this is, from my perspective, is to get people involved, to make people aware of what's going on. And, you know, and if you think we need better, more recycling services, you should call your alderman and say so, please.
Yeah, exactly. That's where you go. And also do things like, again, I put in my pitch for Chicago Recycling Coalition on Facebook. Become a fan, because we're going to keep you posted. And we're just about to roll out an updated website at chicagorecycling.org. It's not up yet. I'm hoping within the week that it's up there. And then it's full tilt boogie. Go out, and we're going to make sure the city hears us. And you're right, Mick. That's the only way you make things happen, is to raise your voice.
Absolutely.
And as I said, last but not least, plastic bags. Let's do a nod to this as well. Last year, the city council passed an ordinance requiring stores that sell 25% of their products as foods or pharmaceuticals to have plastic bag recycling. I really haven't seen much of this in my neighborhood, but then again, I haven't been looking for it. I just kind of, it just got on my radar screen again because I realized that the reporting period is the end of February. And then the city will tell us, they got to wait 10 more months to tell us what kind of compliance there was with it. But I'm interested in people telling me, writing to me, write Mike at MikeNovak.net. Have you seen plastic recycling bins in small stores in Chicago, the ones that sell food and, you know, drug stores? Now, obviously, the Walgreens and the CVSs can afford to do that. It's already in the supermarket, so that they don't even count. I'm talking about the corner mom-and-pop stores, where they really do sell 25% of their gross is foodstuffs. And I'm wondering if those markets have the recycling bins.
Yeah, I've seen it in a couple places. Neighborhood Market, where I live, and up at Rogers Park, does have, you know, the plastic bag recycling bins, and I was impressed to see that. Obviously, like you mentioned, Walgreens and CVS have them now, I've seen. So there is a little bit, you know, there's a little bit more availability for plastic bag recycling. I think there are two issues as I see it right now with this. I mean, the first one, of course, and really the same two issues we were just talking about with multi-unit recycling and with blue cart recycling. I mean, the issues are education and enforcement. You know, do people know, you know, people who go visit these stores and take their stuff home in plastic bags, do they know, you know, that they can recycle them? Do they know why it's important to recycle them? And then second of all, you know, as this ordinance does get monitored by the city, is the city really going to press people to comply with it? I mean, you know, because again, we've got these laws in the books which, you know, you read the text of them, they sound great, you know, that would give us vigorous recycling programs across the city. But unless, you know, you're using both the carrot and the stick, it just doesn't happen.
Yeah, so, and we won't even know for another year whether anybody's recycling or to what extent they're recycling plastic bags in the city. In the meantime, places like Target and CVS are encouraging people to bring in their own bags. They'll give you a discount, I guess a nickel per brand bag you bring in.
It's
which is
a symbol, but
it's
still
token. Yeah, well, it's better, I keep thinking it's still better if you charge people for the plastic that you give them. And when they see seven bags add up on their ticket, that's also psychological because it's 35 cents, but they might go, they'll see the seven items and go, I don't want to pay for that. Why am I doing that?
I'm with you. I think a tax would be far more effective in changing behavior, getting people to think about this habit than, you know, a 5 cent rebate. I just think that it doesn't weigh out equally in people's minds. I agree with you on that.
Yeah. And as always, I would be remiss if I didn't tell people, for goodness sake, get a reusable bag.
Yeah.
And I leave them in the trunk of my car, hanging on the back door of my house. If I walk down to the store, I bring it with me. You just have to remember to do it.
Absolutely. I mean, my girlfriend's got one of those nifty little ones, ball up and keep
the Chico
bags. Your bag or your purse. I mean, so they're really easy. It does require you to sort of switch your habits. I mean, I'll be the first to admit, I've been to the store. You know, you're stopping at the store on the way home or something like that. You didn't think about going. It's just a, you know, I'm doing this when I'm out running errands, and you forgot to bring your bag. So it does, you do have to get in the habit of thinking about it a little bit different way, but you know what? It's possible to do. And Mike's waving his little
my Chico bag, which Chico is in bag. My briefcase. I carry it with me at all times. So, you know, and people think, well, you're a geek. Well, you know what? We heard.
But other people think, well, yeah, he has been for a long time.
Yeah, that's true. On the other hand, we heard earlier today that all this plastic is floating around in the Pacific Ocean. I'm trying not to be part of that.
I hate to tell you folks, but it's floating around in Lake Michigan, too. In the summer, I swim. I do open water swimming in the lake. And, like, a number of times I've been out offshore, you know, quarter, half mile and look down and see a bag on the bottom. It's really disheartening, you know.
It is.
And it's not just the litter thing. I mean, we've talked about this before. When these bags, when and if they do break down, they, you know, the plastic essentially can enter the ecosystem and can cause all sorts of damage, you know, sort of along the food chain there. So it's a problem.
That's Mick Dumke. You can go to www.chicagoreader.com on the homepage. Look under blogs. You click on that. The first one that'll come up is Clout City. He's just written about the TIFs and the shadow budget. He follows the environment. Stick around. Eric Hansen's on the line. We're going to get to him in just a second. With Christmas just about 12 days away, yikes, you'd better make that list and check it at least twice, then count on the folks at Sid's Greenhouses and Garden Center to help you get through it with great gifts, plus home and party decor. Do yourself a favor this year and get a real florist quality poinsettia from Sid's Greenhouses. And no, they are not poisonous. We cleared that up earlier on the show. Don't let him eat the whole plant.
I know. But if he munches a leaf or two, I'm okay.
You're cool with that.
Yeah.
All right. Now, SIDS delivers throughout the entire Chicagoland area, and in addition to poinsettias, they also have the best custom-made-to-order floral gifts in Chicagoland and much, much more. So get your list of family, friends, and business associates together today. Call SIDS tomorrow, and it's done. SIDS can also help with home party decorating. Why not put a fresh Christmas centerpiece on your holiday table? Get it at SIDS. You've just saved yourself some precious time during the crazy holiday season. Plus, SIDS' entire stock of decorations and ornaments is 50 to 75% off this week. Fresh cut trees, wreaths, and garlands are still available. I've talked to them about this, the green stuff this season. The slogan is, if you want to go green, go real. Real trees. SIDS, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway. Don't forget to keep them hydrated, of course, too. And in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassert Boulevard. Now, folks, it's the last call for Christmas at the Farm, Northwind Perennial Farm in Wisconsin. That's today. This special celebration of the season ends today at 4 p.m. So make it a special day by heading up to Northwind Perennial Farm, just north of Lake Geneva and west of Burlington. They've transformed the century-old vintage dairy barn into a Christmas wonderland filled with fabulous ornaments and gifts by local artists. There are holiday garden containers and spectacularly decorated fresh evergreen wreaths. And it's Wisconsin, after all. There's snow on the ground. We didn't get a lot here, but they got some. And that gives you a chance to stand by the fire pit where you can warm your hands, cook marshmallows, and look out over the spectacular scenery. Wouldn't you rather do that today than fight the crowds in a shopping mall? Northwind Perennial Farm in Burlington, Wisconsin. It's an easy trip from Chicago and suburbs. For information and directions, 262-248-8229. Better yet, all that information is on their website, northwindperennialfarm.com. Christmas at the farm, you will never forget it.
Logan Square's Cafe Bella is all about wonderful food at highly affordable prices. There are Latin, French, and Italian influences in Chef Cesar Casas' decadent sandwiches and wraps, bruschetta and mango-fused guacamole, all served with great coffee. For the tilapia provençal or salmon filet, you may want to BYOB. Cafe Bella, 3311 West Fullerton, just east of Kimball. Go to cafebellaonline.com or call 773-292-5040. Cafe Bella. For gourmet, healthy eating.
Heather's ready to go right
I'm
now.
I'm starving.
Up the cafe.
This made me hungrier.
Here's a tip from the care of trees. When removing snow, try to gently brush it off. Don't shake the branches, as this may cause them to break. This is especially true for evergreens, which can collect excessive amounts of snow. If the snow is frozen on the branch and will not brush off easily, it's best to let it melt naturally to avoid damage to the tree or shrub. If you know that snow is coming and you think that a plant might have trouble, relatively small trees can be, you're not doing a big one, but they can be wrapped together or the leaders tied with strips of carpet, strong cloth, or, as we discovered last week from the care of trees, own Sean Kingzett, nylon stockings, or as I like to say, pantyhose.
Mm-hmm.
The arborist's best friend. But don't forget to remove those ties in the spring, and don't forget to make the care of trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. Great company. The Care of Trees, their business is people, and their love for trees. Let's go to line one. The man's been patiently holding on, and that's Eric Hansen. How you doing, Eric?
Hey, how you doing?
Great. You're making a very interesting trip this week. Tell us about it.
Yeah, well, as you know, I've been we had talked last spring in regards to converting over lawn equipment to propane.
Yeah, and your company is Competitive Lawn Care, Inc. The link is on my website, MikeNovak.net, this week's show.
Competitive Lawn Service, Inc.
Lawn Service, Inc. I am so sorry.
Oh, that's fine. Out of Downers Grove.
I have the correct link. I just have the wrong name.
Right. we've been waiting for some good quality propane trucks. And propane trucks have been available through retrofitting them and things like that. But they aren't very efficient that way. They're about 20 to 30% less efficient than like a gasoline fuel vehicle. And
Now you're saying when you retrofit them, they're less efficient.
They're typically because they inject the vapors right into the carburetor.
Uh-huh.
You lose some level of efficiency.
Ah.
And so Roush for the last 3 years has been working with Ford to come out with a production Ford vehicle that is retrofitted right at the factory and does it in liquid all the way to the cylinders. And what they're finding, I was just out there a month ago and test drove one of these vehicles, and they're finding that their efficiency is only about 10% less than gasoline, which is just a great thing. So we'd like to get it back here and put it into production and see what our numbers actually come out to, when we have it under load and everything. So
you're driving the very first in the country Roush Ford F-350 propane truck from Detroit to Al Pamonte Ford in Melrose Park on Wednesday, right?
Yeah, next week on Wednesday, finally, after waiting, and we were hoping that we'd get them into our fleet for the 2009 season, but looks like for the spring of 2010, that's when we'll be able to have a number of these working. And the first one is delivered next week on Wednesday. So we'll be driving to Detroit and then driving it back from Detroit, coming down 94 and on propane and come back into the Chicagoland area. So.
There's a song there. I think it's a Grateful Dead. Driving that train. High on propane.
High on propane.
High on propane, yeah. So.
Well, you say that the efficiency is not quite as good as gasoline, so why would somebody get a propane truck?
Well, because for the emissions, is anywhere between 30 to 60%. Less emissions that are coming out of a propane-powered vehicle as opposed to a comparable gasoline vehicle.
Uh-huh.
And the city of Chicago has been real good with, as they brought in the propane buses that now operate in between the buildings in downtown Chicago. And, I remember going down to see the windows, numbers of years ago, and once you get some of those buses on State Street on diesel or on gasoline or whatever, by getting those running on propane, you're reducing down the amount of emissions by about 60%. It depends on some of the types of emissions that are coming out. So that's really the reason, or one of the reasons that you want to, you know, run on some of these more efficient fuels. So,
and there, the question I got to ask you is, if you're driving from Detroit, how, and it's the mileage isn't as much, and it is a truck, so obviously you're not going to get there on one tank, right?
Well, that's a great question.
Which mini mart are you stopping at along the way? That's what I want to know.
Well, one of the things, and the Propane Research Council has some grant funds, and they've worked through a number of different national companies. Flying J is one of them, to put locations that can be refueled on propane. So the trip, I think, is about 340 miles. I think we have about a 320-mile range, and that's not really going to work. So I was just up in Benton Harbor on Friday at the Flying J and checking out and making sure that, A, I can get propane there, B, they have the correct fittings and everything like that so that we can stop in there so we're not running out of fuel before we get back to Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, that that would be always a consideration of anybody wanting to get a propane-fueled car, I would think.
Well, and I think we're kind of on the cutting edge of this. I think where propane works real well is for companies that are running fleet vehicles out of their location and not doing large trips.
Right.
Now, in our situation, we actually in June got approved through the state and our local municipality, so we've got our own fuel fill station. I think it's the first one in Illinois, at least that I know, and especially for lawn maintenance companies. And that's at our location in Downers. So we can fuel from there. Our maximum that we're running these trucks on a daily basis might be 20 to 40 miles. We've got a 320-mile range. So we can fuel directly from our location on a daily or weekly basis, you know, for our fleet.
Yeah, and that makes a lot more sense if you can control that and you're going from the fleet.
Right.
And, of course, you use it for you've converted. Have you converted all of your power tools to propane, all the formerly gas ones?
Well, I just came up with this Ford would love to come in and convert all of our trucks to propane as well, so we can you know, cycle out all of our gasoline trucks. We really want to see how this works, and so at this point in time and for next season, we'll have a commercial crew that runs 100% on propane. So that's the truck, that's the all of the equipment, and even down to some of the small trimmers and blowers. And some of that technology isn't really even there yet because we don't have a lot of good equipment out that can run on a commercial basis. So we've done some weird conversions, and we've got some backpacks that have some propane containers in them and things like that, so that we do have a commercial crew that will be 100% propane.
And it's no less safe than gasoline?
Well, I put it where we've got propane that we have to carry on our trucks and in our trailers. But if you've got two-cycle gasoline, mixed gasoline that is sitting in containers and open containers a lot of times that can spill onto the floors, I think it's just as dangerous. So I don't think we have an additional danger. There are some different things that we have to do as far as with filling, and our employees have to go through training in Illinois or whatever for I don't think it's any more dangerous than you know, as we work with gasoline.
Well, good luck on your run this week. I want to talk on the flip side, as they say in radio, when you get into Chicago, you tell me how the ride was and how the thing handles, since it's the first Ford F-350, you get to give us an auto report on that, and we will do it either next week or the week after. I don't know. We'll see. We'll talk about it. That is Eric Hansen from Competitive Lawn Service, Inc., and we will talk real soon about how the trip went.
Yeah, that's great. We'll be back next week, and we're bringing video and photos and everything that we'll get from the trip, and we'll see how it goes. We'll see if we get slammed with snow or not coming
okay,
back.
Okay, great. Be safe.
Okay,
take care now.
Thought,
that's great. It. Bye. Mighty House is next. I'll join you next week on the Mike Novak Show.